Show. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we are, live on the 16th day of October 2014. This is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you'll find access to the chat room. Folks already filing in. We're not ones for standing on punctuality, you know. Good evening, Carol. Good evening, Jeremy. Good evening, Michael. Good evening, Texas T and Waggy and Will from Chicago, all capably moderated by indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky. And more are coming. Hot diggity. Yes, indeed. Also at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the Listen Live links. And hey, this is really cool. There is access to years and years worth of podcasts right on HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Just click it, and you can go and get whatever it is you want. I think it may even be... It may be even automatically picking up each night's individual podcast. So doesn't that make things a lot easier? Yeah, it does. Also, of course, at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com, you will find the PayPal page. And that is, of course, how we keep all of this on the air. We are at this instant only $55 away from being done with fundraising for the evening. And at $205, we can be done for the week. So 20 folks at $10 apiece, 40 at 5, well, 45 at 5, really, or any combination thereof, and we're done for the week, and we can kind of stay ahead. Being ahead, you know, standing up on a little hill instead of, you know, trying to dig our way out of a hole, yeah, there's a big difference. So there you are. Also, of course, I need to add, I really do, and I got some work to do this weekend, and I'm making a list. But I need to add the traditional mail address to the contribute page. That, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801, with the caveat that checks and money orders should not be made payable to Bob Kincaid, as Bob Kincaid does not see them, and Boss Man Wayne takes care of the bill paying here. So make them to The Horn or Head On Communications, something like that. Okay? Okay, cool. So here we are. It is Thorn in the Side Thursday on The Horn. We have a lineup that is for the ages. I'm calling this evening the Ebola, E-Gads, Edition of Thorn in the Side Thursday. Mm-hmm. So, just sort of strap in. Now, a little other caveat to the program this evening. Over at Progressive Radio Network, PRN, Sandy Leon Vest asked me to do an appearance on her program, which coincidentally is running in a sort of overlap situation with this program. She wanted me on at about 6:30 p.m. So about 6:25 p.m., we're going to take a break here. Now, don't tune away. Stop it. We're going to take a break here. And what we will do is we will simulcast the conversation with her. I'll use the gizmo line here, and we will be connected. And then we will share out the entirety of the conversation. It'll be Sandy and me and my colleague Bo Webb, co-founder of the Appalachian Communities Health Emergency Campaign. And we'll be talking about some mountaintop removal related stuff. More new information out today, more new data, another study out showing just how dangerous mountaintop removal is for the human populations who have to live with it. Okie dokie. Good. Now, where to begin this evening? Let's see. Oh yeah. Hey, here's yeah. So this this goes back to last night. I wrapped up the program. And again, remember, tonight's Thorn in the Side Thursday is the E-Bowler E-Gads E-Edition. All right? Yeah. So I'd wrapped up the program last night when Agnes pointed out something to me. They had shut down Yeager Airport. Yeager Airport is, of course, the airport in Charleston, West Virginia, out of which, you know, when I fly, I fly. We've got dailies to Dallas, and Dallas to Charleston, dailies to Philly, Washington, and where else? Atlanta, of course, and Detroit. No dailies to New York City. No. American used to fly daily to New York City until the fracking boom took over, and so now all the dailies run to Dallas on American. So, anyway, apparently they shut down. I mean, went into full sweat condition alpha mode last night down in Charleston. Rusty Marks over at the Charleston Gazette, WVGazette.com, reports a chemical leak at Yeager Airport late Wednesday that sent two airport workers to the hospital and closed the airport for about 3 hours was an accident, airport officials believe. See, you have to add the because we live in an America that is scared half out of its tiny mind. And of course, this is EGADS, Ebola, right? Well, it turns out there was some unclaimed luggage that apparently belongs to someone from the Logan, West Virginia area. That's down in the mountaintop removal sacrifice zone. It's also down in the burning up with pills zone. Here's the part that's interesting. And you know, you who are more inclined toward chemistry type stuff might want to just take a run at this. I find it fascinating. So two airport workers went to the hospital. They closed down the airport for about 3 hours. They shut down the road to the airport. I mean, they were in full-on freak-out mode. A couple of baggage handlers, maybe baggage searchers, I'm not sure. But Yeager Airport Director Rick Atkinson said there was an unclaimed bag that had been reported missing and showed up late, a day late. On a Delta Airlines flight, and Mr. Atkinson said, well, that a staff member opened a piece of luggage and two personal hygiene products had mixed together. Somehow the stuff just got tossed around, maybe broke or something. A little bit of it's fine. A lot of it in a concentrated space is going to irritate your nose and eyes. The bag had been sitting around for about 12 hours when a staffer decided that maybe they should open it in order to find out who the owner was. Because after all, it's not like Delta has a bag checking policy, computer system that tags tickets to with people's names on it, you know, electronic tickets, computer systems, everything, so that when you check a bag, the bag, no, they don't. I don't think they have any of that. I think they chisel little name tag and then on a rock or a piece of old pottery and they drop it in the bag. Right. So the Delta worker opened the bag, and the two airport staffers got gassed, Delta employees, and they were then decontaminated at the airport. Then they got sent to CAMC, Charleston Area Medical Center General Hospital, for further decontamination. Rusty Marks at the Gazette writing, initial reports identified the substance released as CS gas, a common type of tear gas. Anybody want to take a run at this? What personal hygiene products yes, Texas Tea, Mr. Atkinson would be the Jägermeister. Oh, you guys are good. So mouthwash, that's got a lot of, well, there's now alcohol-free mouthwash. But mouthwash, okay. Personal hygiene products, hairspray? Okay, there's a candidate, Waggy in the chat room pointing out, Nair is some nasty, yeah. Cologne? Shampoo? And remember, all of it has to be transported in little bitty bottles. Well, no, that's the stuff that carries on. I guess you can carry a full bottle of stuff in checked baggage. But if it was checked baggage, they would have already known who the owner was, right? Because of the computer with the... So if it was carry-on, but then how could it have been reported? See, some of this doesn't add up. I mean, I'm not going all, you know, full Alex Jones on you or anything. Okay, deodorant. I'm licked. What personal, so there's the question. What personal hygiene products, when combined in quantity, result in tear gas? And remember, we're talking about, let me double check here, just to make sure. Terry Sayre, the airport's assistant director, he would be the assistant Jägermeister, said the bag belonged to a man from the Logan area whom he did not identify. So now we've got it drilled down. The likelihood of it being hair removal cream or douche or any sort of feminine product, and frankly, okay, I am not female, and I don't deal with those hygiene issues, but really, I'm saying douche is out. Because really, I mean... Oh, well, I don't know. Vinegar? Acid? Mixing with it? It would be interesting to find out. But it does take a more ominous tone. Assistant Jägermeister Sayre said airport staff also found prescription medication in the bag that was not prescribed to the owner. The drugs have been turned over to authorities. Rush Limbaugh? Anybody? Viagra? (sighs) But apparently it was significant enough to cause breathing difficulties. I got no clue. But there was, you know, there was a low-grade freak out on. Because, you know, Ebola is going to get us all. Ron and Raleigh. Hey, Bob, I'm guessing that it was an old bottle of High Karate and Just for Men. High Karate, oh my God, I'd forgot. Because we've already had a Jovan Musk from the 1970s reference in the chat room. Long and tormented memories, huh? But no, The nationwide freak out is on. Irish Dave pointing out, don't be so quick to rule out douche, Bob. Among amosexuals, douche is a third wedding anniversary gift. God. And Irish Dave also pointing out that maybe it was purchased at an auction in Kansas. Okay, hydrogen peroxide and hair color, just for men, hair color, and something acidic. I just don't know. I don't know what results in tear gas. Let's see, Carol pointing out, come on, nothing you put on your hoo-ha burns, or at least it shouldn't. Okay, so we may not have an answer to this, but I mention it because it goes hand in hand. Oh, the stupid, it burns as us. Two of West Virginia's representatives in the U.S. House of Representatives are calling for a temporary ban on travel to the United States from West African countries stricken by Ebola, a move opposed by the White House and most prominent public health officials. Let's see. Representative Shelley Moore Capito, who is not a particularly intelligent human being, said,
I call on the president to protect the American people from this devastating disease by banning travel to the United States from West Africa for the duration of this crisis.
Now, remember, this is a woman who, when 300,000 people were poisoned in the general Kanawha County and 8 other county areas back last January, said she thought it was pretty funny. This is a woman who represents a district, some members of whom are poisoned daily by mountaintop removal. This is a woman elected from a state where there are 4,000 excess deaths every year in mountaintop removal counties. This is a woman who couldn't even bring herself to support a new bill introduced in the Senate to make it easier for coal miners with black lung to get their federal black lung benefits.
But she wants a travel ban to keep those people from coming into America. Confidence is eroding all over the country that we don't have the protocols. We've got to get the American people the confidence and the emotional fortitude to say, yes, we can stop this. It's containable. Shelley, God damn it, you can't shoot the Ebola virus, okay? So just don't take the NRA's calls for a little while, all right, honey?
Meanwhile, Nick Rahal, who debated Evan Jenkins last night in exactly as I called it, I predicted it, didn't even have to get out the frayed and tattered robe with the moon and star appliques coming loose on it, nor ask the eight ball that always says, answer hazy, ask again later. I called it. It was, I love coal. No, you don't love coal. You love that Obama. don't neither do to. Yeah. So Nick Rahal, never missing an opportunity to pander, also said, I want a temporary travel ban that both protects the American people and ensures needed resources continue to get to West Africa. So it's kind of the Roach Motel approach. Supplies get in, but nobody gets out. So once you've flown the stuff to Africa, I guess under Nick Rahal's plan, you have to stay there. And the desperate sit in Casablanca and wait and wait and wait.
Help me. You've got to help me, Rick.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the smart people keep saying, no, you can't impose a travel ban to West Africa or on West Africa coming here. You can't do that. Because then you'll make the disease worse. To which the political geniuses respond, Ebola! Idiots. Josh Earnest, the White House press secretary, said, our experts tell us that the only way to completely eliminate the risk from the Ebola virus to the American people is to stop the outbreak at the source.
Well, okay, yeah,
but more and more is becoming available to us. Again, with the frayed and tattered robe with the moon and the stars and the magic eight ball that says, answer hazy, ask again later. I said it a couple of weeks ago, I think. The reason we have the problem we have in Dallas is because Dallas is in Texas. And because in Texas, they hates them some job-killing regulations. So consequently, we're finding out from the nurses who worked with Thomas Eric Duncan that there was contaminated material stacked ceiling high because nobody knew what to do with it. And there was nobody there who knew how to teach them to properly glove and gown and get themselves isolated from potential contamination. Whew. Because money. You get the idea, though, right? Huh, interesting. Jeremy pointing out, CS gas of the homemade type seems to be a mixture of pepper and alcohol. I'm sure pepper of some kind is in personal cleaning items, or maybe a perfume? I don't know. It's weirder and weirder. Thank you for doing the research, Jeremy. Oh, yeah, we can, that's right, Texas T. We can ask Louis Gohmert. Like I said, this is going to be a mighty special Thorn in the Side Thursday, and I think we've got some Louis Gohmert in the mix. Who will be joyfully reelected by the voters of the 1st Congressional District of Texas? Is there a Democrat even bothering to run? Is anybody asking, you know, why do we keep embarrassing ourselves by sending this loon to Washington, D.C.? No. So we will take a break now. And I'm going to hook up for this interview, and we'll go silent for a little bit. Don't anybody run away. We'll be right back.
our way of life.
And welcome back to Political Analysis. I'm your host, Sandy Leon Best, and I'm joined now by Head On Radio's Bob Kincaid and activist Bo Webb. Bob Kincaid is the co-founder of the Appalachian Community's Health Emergency Campaign. Bob says he's devoted more time to covering the issue of mountaintop removal than any other broadcaster on earth. And you can listen to Bob Kincaid weeknights from 6 to 9 p.m. at headonradionetwork.com. Bo Webb lives in Peachtree Hollow near Neoma, West Virginia, in the Coal River Valley. A sixth-generation resident of the Coal River Valley, Bo is former board president and current member of Coal River Mountain Watch. He's also a Vietnam War veteran. In 2010, Bo was one of the leaders of the largest ever national protest on mountaintop removal mining called Appalachia Rising in front of the White House. And Bo is also the co-founder of Mountain Justice Summer. For his tireless advocacy, he was awarded the Purpose Prize in 2010, and today he helps to lead the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Campaign. That's the H campaign, which we'll be talking about shortly. The campaign essentially asks the federal government to comprehensively study the impacts of mountaintop removal mining and to impose a national moratorium on mountaintop removal permits until those studies are completed. Bo Webb and Bob Kincaid have both been active in organizing the struggle against big coal in and around Appalachia and the Appalachian Mountains. Bo Webb and Bob Kincaid, are you there?
I'm here.
Good. It sounds like you're both there. Welcome to the show. And Bo Webb, you just heard probably this short excerpt that we aired from the story that you like to tell about your Appalachian roots. Maybe we could begin by you just kind of continuing that story.
I was a little surprised to hear that, but yes. Well, we always went back to West Virginia on the weekends and back to our roots. And after I came back, we moved to Cleveland, Ohio, as you noted. And when I returned from the Marines in Vietnam, I got an apprenticeship as a tool and die maker in Cleveland, Ohio, and got married and had a family there. But I always took my family back to West Virginia for the weekends, just as I had gone as a young man. And then in 1980, I bought my grandmother's property, which is our home place, after she passed away. And in 2000, I sold my business in Cleveland and moved back to my roots to enjoy fishing, hunting, and the mountains, and immediately ran into mountaintop removal. And when I went up the mountain and I saw it, what was happening, it was a life-changing moment for me. And I just knew this was wrong. So I've been fighting it since.
I mean, this is just a devastating practice. I was wondering when you were talking what your kids, what your children thought. I mean, did they see this happening, or did they see the results of mountaintop removal mining?
They didn't see it in the beginning. Then my son went up the mountain with Mitch. I told him what I saw, and he was stunned. And then I took a flyover. And then that's when I saw the enormity of it and how far spread it was. It wasn't just in my community. It was over the entire southern portion of the state of West Virginia. And it became, you can see it, the more flights you take over as the years go by, you see the encroachment on communities. They are, back in 2000, 2001, they were back in the mountains a couple of miles, not near communities. But that insatiable greed for the last lump of coal has now brought them directly on top of our communities. They are a 2,100-acre mountaintop removal site now sits directly over my home. It's within, by the crow flies, within 300 yards.
It's heartbreaking is what it is. It's just completely heartbreaking the way that the Appalachian and all of this beautiful country and mountains have been ravaged But I want to go now to Bob Kincaid, and or actually either of you can take this, but I'm not sure if you read the recent statistics from the EIA, the Energy Information Administration, and they say that coal burning actually increased in the U.S. By nearly 4% last year, and that this year it should see an even bigger spike, and that's according to the Energy Information Administration. So, I mean, how does this, the AIC Act, which is what you really came on the show this evening to talk about, how does that address a statistic like this? Who wants to jump in?
Bob, go ahead.
In essence, Sandy, the AIC Act is not necessary or should not necessarily be viewed as a coal bill per se. This is a health and human rights bill. The statistics you cite are probably correct. Then they're projecting increased coal usage for the next 30, 40, 50 years. I personally think we should work to prevent and reduce that. But at the end of the day, this is about human health and human rights. The AIC Act, we would have proposed the AIC Act if they had ping pong ball factories on top of flattened mountains and people were being poisoned and dying. Okay? This is about the ability of people to live their everyday lives in some semblance of peace, which people cannot do now in Appalachia's mountaintop removal sacrifice zones. It's, you know, the purpose here, and let's understand something else. If coal burning, and it has reduced, it really has. You know, we've gone from a 50% coal load in energy generation down to less than 40% now. It is on the decrease. Solar and wind are increasing. And, yes, a lot of coal has been replaced by hydrofrack gas. But let's understand something. If the EPA was somehow miraculously able to stop all coal burning for electrical purposes in America tomorrow, the explosions, the 5.5 million pounds of high explosives that are used daily in Appalachia would still be getting used, okay, because there is an export market. And this stuff is going overseas.
That's so important for people to understand.
It absolutely is. It is critical to understand. We can talk
about the U.S. now. I mean, we're just shifting the focus, really.
Well, and arguably in the wrong direction.
In the wrong direction. But did Bo want to jump in there?
Yeah, I think I heard him there.
Yeah, just for a moment. I'm talking about the export market, you know, for all the right-wingers out there.
I don't think there's that many right-wingers that listen to this show, but there may be.
Oh, there's always a lurker or two, Sandy.
A few trolls, yeah.
The trouble there, checking you out and keeping you on track here.
I'm sure.
We have foreign countries in southern West Virginia that are actually blowing up our mountains and making our people sick. A Russian coal giant, Mekel Corporation, purchased Bluestone Coal in southern West Virginia. They operate mountaintop removal sites. They have more violations against them than any other coal company. We have Indian SR Corporation through Fraser Creek Mining in southern West Virginia, very near Bob's home, matter of fact, is blowing up the mountains. And as Bob said, this is a health issue. What I have seen in my community, we are experiencing the long-term health effects of breathing dust from mountaintop removal mine sites. This dust comes from the explosives that are blowing up the strata, which most of our strata in southern West Virginia and in Appalachia is sandstone, and sandstone contains silica. Now we find that it's also contains a lot of molybdenum, which is a cancer-causing agent that's being fine particulates put into the air that we're breathing. People have been breathing this stuff on a steady basis since about 1995, 96, and there since mountaintop removal got ramped up. We are seeing cancer case after cancer case after cancer case in the Coal River Valley where I live. Cancer rates there are nearly triple the national average. Birth defects are double the national average. And it's just in these mountaintop removal communities specific. So it definitely is a health issue. and mountaintop removal is totally unnecessary. It's not, has nothing to do with our energy independence. It has nothing to do with powering our grid. Less than 4% of MTR coal is used in powering our grid. The majority of it has been shipped overseas, a lot of metallurgical coal and whatnot, and fat cats on Wall Street are making out like bandits off mountaintop removal, and the people that live in those communities are paying the deadly price for their benefit.
Wow, and I think it's worth noting here that back to the IEA, but its executive director Maria Vanderhoven said recently, and this is a quote: "Like it or not, coal is here to stay for a long time to come." And then she said, "Coal is abundant and geopolitically secure, and coal-fired plants are easily integrated into existing power systems." And then she added, almost as a footnote, she said, "Coal burning in its current form is simply unsustainable for the world's climate." So, you know, I'm not sure where exactly Maria is coming from, but Bob Kincaid,
yes.
Federal scientists, and I think I read about this on one of your websites or the AIC Act website, just recently confirmed elevated levels of mountaintop removal airborne dust in neighboring communities and that around Appalachia. And the USGS, the U.S. Geological Survey, apparently found the fine dust, this type that's known to harm human health, at levels nearly six times that of communities without mountaintop removal, you know, nearby. And that report apparently shows that the dust comes from the mountaintop removal sites and not from other sources, but it conclusively shows this. And that these areas, as you were saying, have higher rates of several serious illnesses, including many that are associated with this particular type of dust exposure. So why is so much of the USGS health resource research relating to mountaintop removal been delayed or not even been released?
There's no definitive answer to that, Sandy. We have our suspicions.
Why do you have some ideas?
Yeah, I have my suspicions, and I think Bo probably shares them. There is a lot of power concentrated in the coal industry and in the coal industry's bought and paid for politicians. And they have the power to lean on federal agencies. But the fact of the matter is, this data is out now, and there's brand new data out even today. Again, related to these dust exposures, you know, we focused on, and rightfully so, we focused on water issues for a very long time, but it turns out that it may be the stuff that you can't see. It may be these tiny particles that are the size of less than the diameter of a human hair that are getting to us. Bo mentioned silicates a little bit ago.
Yeah.
Silica, if you look at it under a microscope, it looks like a tiny itsy-bitsy piece of jagged glass, and it behaves in your body in exactly that fashion. It's so tiny that they're able to cross the cell, they're able to cross through the cell wall. They transit the blood-brain barrier. They transit the heart-lung barrier. They transit the placental barrier in a mother carrying a child. And this stuff is absolutely toxic, and we've known it for a very, very long time. The better question, if I may, Sandy, is why do our politicians, and I'll name names, why does Joe Manchin, Representative Shelley Moore Capito, Representative Nick Joe Rahal, Representative David Mooney, Governor Earl Ray Tomlin, Senator Mitch McConnell, Senator Rand Paul, why do all of these politicians keep denying science? See, we talk about denialists, and most of the time we're talking about climate change. But the fact of the matter is, we can talk about mountaintop removal's toxicity and never even talk about the climate change issue.
Why do they deny it?
Because there's good money in denying it.
But, I mean, talk, if you can, about these specific connections that put them in a position where they need or feel they need to deny.
Sandy, well, here, I comment on that. There's been more than 100 years in West Virginia and Eastern Kentucky, for that matter, but in West Virginia particularly, that if you desire to run for political office, you best be a friend of coal. You will never get elected. Matter of fact, Joe Manchin, when he comes to the microphone in West Virginia, when he comes to give a speech or whatever, the first words out of his mouth are, "Hello, I'm Joe Manchin. I'm a friend of coal." That is demanded of them in order to function and at any political position. The coal industry has rocked that state over 100 years ago, took control of it, and they dictate everything. So our politicians are beholden to them, and they are coal. Joe Manchin is coal. I'm sorry to say, but Senator Jay Rockefeller is coal. Shelley Moore Capitol is coal. When you're talking to them, you're talking to the coal industry. On September the 19th,
Go ahead.
Real quick, because I want to comment on this thing about why you think the USGS work has been suppressed.
Yes.
I visited with Joe Manchin on September the 19th, a year ago. I implored him and urged him to get behind this research. USGS was working on this research. I've been to USGS laboratories in Reston, Virginia, and saw the work they were doing. And I relayed that to Senator Manchin in hopes that we would have a leader in our state that would take reins and get this out. And I explained to him what was going on and what they were finding. Now, they were finding human lung tissue growing tumors once exposed to this stuff that Bob's talking about. And lo and behold, within 2 minutes of that conversation, he had excused himself for an important phone call. He never came back. That was September the 19th. September the 27th, all funding for United States Geological Survey scientists' research on human health on the issue of mountaintop removal was pulled. All of the funding was pulled, and they no longer have the funds to work with that. And so we're fighting a machine that is old, it's embedded, it's powerful, and we have a real problem. They have really robbed our they've infiltrated our democracy.
And before, I mean, we're closing in on the end of the show. We just have a few more minutes. So I want to make sure that people understand what exactly the AIC Act is. I mean, you Beau Webb, you said that that USGS report that we were talking about confirms the urgency of the AIC Act, or also what's known as H.R. 526. And you described it as an elegant bill. So, you know, this is a bill, and I'm just going to tell people to make sure they get this information, that would halt new or enlarged mountaintop removal permits unless and until the federal government completes a definitive health study determining that the process does not harm residents' health. Talk a little bit more, either of you, about what is it about this particular bill that makes it so elegant? Where they can go.
Okay, first of all, to learn more, you can read the science, you can read the bill itself by going to acheact.org, acheact.org. Secondly, what makes it so elegant is that it answers so many questions. First of all, every time we've raised the issue of mountaintop removal here in Appalachia, we have heard the squealing of, but what about our jobs? Well, nobody loses a job through the AIC Act. That's very important. It does not affect existing permits. It can't, as a matter of law. So no one loses a job, but it does stop new permits. Okay, so that's one. Secondly, it's elegant in its operation because it relies upon science, hard science, to make a determination as to whether or not this can safely be done around human populations. Thirdly, further evidence of its elegance is the fact that it costs the American taxpayers exactly nothing. The whole thing is funded by a modest, minuscule little tax on the companies that are doing mountaintop removal. And so it operates in such a way that by the time all is said and done, look, I mean, there's a gamble involved with this, and I think Beau will agree. If the science comes back and says, hey, there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing mountaintop removal, then we got to shut up and go away.
What do you think the chances are that the AIC Act will pass? But actually, before you answer that question, I just want, again, I want people to understand that what mountaintop removal involves is really the clear-cutting of these beautiful mountain forests, and then they blast layers of rock over the coal. You know, they detonate millions of pounds of explosives. Someone wrote the equivalent of over 4,000 Tomahawk cruise missiles per day in that region. And we're talking about West Virginia, Eastern Kentucky, Eastern Tennessee, Southwestern Virginia, over a million acres of the Appalachian Mountains. So before we have to go, and we do have to go, Bob Kincaid, maybe you can just sign off with a final pitch for why people need to find out about the AIC Act and why they need to get, how they can get involved.
Why care about the AIC Act? Because we're all Appalachia now. Okay, everybody is learning that whatever there is to extract from the ground, in these times, some corporation will come and try to get it. The AIC Act points a way forward for us to push back against these people, these corporations that want to poison our communities. Let's pass this. The so-called environmental movement desperately needs a victory. This is the victory we can have.
Well, Bob Kincaid, that was very well said. And Bo, thank you so much, Bo Webb, for being on the program. Your work is just outstanding, and I hope both of you will come back and keep us posted on what's happening with the AIC Act, and let's keep this thing alive.
Absolutely, and it's a pleasure to join you, Sandy. Thank you.
It was a pleasure to have you on.
Happy to be on anytime.
Great. And I'm Sandy Leon Best. My guests tonight were activist Bo Webb and Head On Radio's Bob Kincaid. You are listening to the Progressive Radio Network. This is Political Analysis. We're here every Thursday. We'll see you next week.
Okay. That was fun. Hope y'all enjoyed it as much as I did. Let's see, just a couple of things to do here to wrap stuff up. All clear. Very good. It is a minute before 7 p.m. here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Sparky has already posted it in the Horn chat room, but if you want to read more about this brand new study out, you can go to wvgazette.com, and you will find there a story by Ken Ward Jr. and what we have to do to get this man a Pulitzer. I do not know, but it needs to happen. Study links mountaintop removal dust to cancer. See, what they did is they subjected dust to human cells. The study showed lung tumor promotion and progression and showed that this dust is a cancer promoter. We need to pay attention to that. Again, wvgazette.com if you want to read more. And there are links to the study itself if you want to read it in depth and in detail. So, after all, this is conversation radio, and you are more than welcome to participate in it. It's also Thorn in the Side Thursday, and we got, this is an absolute multiflora rose bush somewhere up the holler when it comes to thorns. And we've got more of those coming. So, we will take a little break. And come back with, because it is, after all, Thursday. And Thursday means Green News Report, and that means Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. And I don't like to miss the Green News Report. So let's check that out. Then we'll come back, more stories, and your calls as well. This is listener-supported conversation radio. An hour into the program, we are still at $55 to go to finish fundraising for the evening. Many thanks to Margaret for saying, have several shows on me. It's a humongous help. You know how to reach the program via Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn, or 304-574-8178. Or on the brand new Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, H-O-R-N, 304-663-4676. We'll be back. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Today you blasted near my street, and my house cracked at my feet. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Politicians by your side, they look so satisfied. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Promises you made amount to stealing. As a giant rock lands on my Chevrolet, suddenly I got that lawsuit feeling. I can't help it if my home is in your way. Hard to know that the sheriff's lips will kiss you. Now, where they kiss you, I can't say. We're asking for a big injunction issue. We can't help it if our homes are in your way. No, we can't help it if our homes are in your way.
It's Thursday, October 16, 2014.
Climate change is in large part due to human activity.
Paul Ryan backs away, sort of, from outright climate science denial.
You see some change of tone, even from those who have been aggressive climate change deniers.
We may have reached peak climate change denial.
Natural gas, if extracted safely, it's the bridge fuel that can power our economy with less of the carbon pollution that causes climate change.
Turns out natural gas isn't a bridge fuel to a low emissions future. Plus, did a U.S. defense contractor really invent a compact nuclear fusion reactor? Separating fact from fiction.
Because that's what we do. All of that and more straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
From the intersection of politics and unmitigated corporate gall.
Hey, Rachel Maddow. Don't give away our address on live TV. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, let me say before we begin that I am highly, highly dubious of the theories that you offered in the teaser that these right-wingers, Paul Ryan and other climate science deniers, are actually backing off of their climate science denial.
I would call it more like tricky, tricky waffling, if anything.
Yeah, at best.
Well, we'll get to that in a moment. But first, you may have heard the big splash this week that aerospace and defense giant Lockheed Martin made with a press release claiming that their research team had achieved the holy grail of nuclear energy, a breakthrough in nuclear fusion, promising small and super cheap nuclear reactors the size of a pickup truck.
No, actually, I didn't hear that. Then again, I've been hiding in the basement with my Ebola hazmat suit on, so I don't really know much of what's going on at all.
Well, not to worry. It does look like nuclear scientists who are not employed by Lockheed Martin are pouring skepticism all over that press release, noting that it lacks technical details like actual results that can be independently verified and an actual working prototype. They say the press release appears to be just angling for more research money.
But what would this nuclear fusion device mean if it was for real?
It's perpetually 10 to 30 years in the future, but if it were for real, it would be a small nuclear reactor that would have very little nuclear waste and would hopefully be a lot cheaper and quicker to construct.
And safer, right? Because nuclear fusion is different than the nuclear fission that we have in our current nuclear reactors.
Right.
But you remain skeptical.
As do most nuclear scientists, apparently.
Good. Good for you and good for them.
Meanwhile, natural gas is not a bridge fuel that will help the U.S. transition to a low-emissions future, as President Obama has claimed. That's according to a new study published this week in the journal Nature. The study examines a lot of moving parts, including energy markets and future energy demand. But the basic upshot of this study is that even if natural gas drillers curbed their methane gas leaks, the surge in cheap, cleaner natural gas is actually increasing energy use and emissions in the U.S., which is offsetting emissions cuts from coal. And worse, investment in the fracking boom is displacing investment in renewable energy sources.
To give the context, a lot of environmentalists had pointed to natural gas, said, oh, it doesn't put off as much carbon, but in fact, it puts off a whole lot more methane, which is also a greenhouse gas, and now we're using more of it because we're producing so much more of it.
Yeah, that's right. Moving on to elections, we've been reporting how the corporate media has suddenly decided to ask candidates about climate change after thoroughly ignoring it for years. In general, Democratic candidates this cycle have walked a fine line of accepting climate science without alienating the fossil fuel industry. But it's getting really tricky for Republicans, where outright denial was a litmus test in the primaries, but is not helpful in the general election. Here's Wisconsin Republican Representative Paul Ryan, who outright denied global warming as a vice presidential candidate just 2 years ago. Now he's shifting to saying he doesn't know if humans are responsible in a debate this week.
I don't know the answer to that question, and I don't think science does either. Does climate change occur? Yeah. Yes, of course we have climate change. We've had climate change forever. Is human involvement involved? Yes, it is. What extent? I don't know.
Yeah, he doesn't know. The scientists know, but he ignores those scientists because, you know, he's not a scientist, all of that.
It does look like the political tide may be turning against climate denial, at least according to the State Department's chief climate negotiator with the United Nations, Todd Stern.
I think we are moving toward a tipping point. We're not there yet, but it's coming, I think. You see some change of tone, even from those who have been aggressive climate change deniers. I doubt, actually, that even a year from now, whether major political candidates will consider it a viable strategy to deny the existence of climate change.
I think that Todd Stern of the U.S. State Department is a climate change denier denier. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. While you're there, please consider a donation to help the Green News Report stay on the air and help bradblog.com do all that we do. We really need your help. Find us and follow us on the Facebooks and the Twitter at Green News Report from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
I think somebody's a Supertramp fan. I've heard him bump out with Supertramp more than a couple of times, Brad and Desi. It's 11 minutes past the hour on this Thorn in the Side Thursday. I'm Bob Kincaid, of course. I'm looking at a question here. Ron writing in and asking, where's the contribution link? Okay. So there's no button up yet like there was on the old website. You have to just go to headonradionetwork.com and then go to the page that says contribute. And the whole PayPal thing is right there. Easy, easy. And shouldn't be any issue at all. But so, okay, that answers that question, hopefully. Thanks for asking it, Ron, because, you know, we're still in the process of getting this thing put back together again. And by we, I mean John Fox. Yeah. Okay. Back up a minute. I want to just offer you an object example of what it means to oppose the coal industry. You know, Bo mentioned that a little bit ago. I want to tell you the story of a man named William C. Marland, M-A-R-L-A-N-D. He was born in 1918. He served honorably in the United States Navy in the Second World War as a lieutenant, and eventually went to my alma mater, West Virginia University, who gave him a law degree, which he then put to work in the Attorney General's office, rapidly rising to become Attorney General of the state of West Virginia in the late 1940s. In 1953, he became governor of the state of West Virginia. And he is noteworthy as governor of the state of West Virginia because of, in his single term as governor, he did something no other governor had ever had the courage to do. He proposed that a tax be imposed upon the coal industry, a tonnage rate, for the wealth that they were taking out of West Virginia as fast as they could possibly go. For this, he was destroyed. He was challenged for re-election. He was challenged by a young coal thug by the name of Cecil Underwood. Cecil Underwood smeared him and sleazed him, called him an alcoholic, said that he was drunk in office and that he drank at the wrong time of the day. Yeah. And he was hounded out of this state. In the 1960s, a writer for the Chicago Sun-Times recognized him, a reporter did, recognized him, and it turned out that William C. Marland, a brilliant legal mind and a good governor, the man who, at the time that other southern governors were standing in doorways and saying, well, I'm not going to allow no mixing of the races in my state. You know, God don't appreciate miscegenation. He presided over the integration of schools in West Virginia in the wake of Brown versus Board of Education and did so without a shot being fired. Yeah. Like I said, he was hounded out of this state and wound up driving a cab in Chicago. He died in 1965. 47 years old, of pancreatic cancer. So that's what happens. That's what happens if you run for political office in this state and you have the unmitigated gall to oppose the coal industry. They are merciless, they are remorseless, and they will try to destroy you. And it's ugly. But the thing is, it is changing. Eventually, we're going to have a new kind of politician in places like Appalachia. Oh, by the way, as the goddess of irony would have it, Cecil Underwood did become the youngest governor ever of the state of West Virginia and served one term and got bounced. And then he went on about his career, and for years and years and years, he was the vice president of West Virginia operations for Island Creek Coal Company. And then
in 1996, he was elected governor of the state of West Virginia as the oldest governor of the state of West Virginia. Cecil Underwood was, of course, a Republican. And the stories were there's so many that Cecil couldn't escape them. The man was drunker than Adam's off ox for 4 years in office. I can't tell you the number of people who have told me the stories about how, for instance, when the governor's office would host its annual Christmas party, they literally propped Cecil up in the corner. He was so plastered. They propped him up in the corner like the corpse at an Irish wake. And, of course, it was 4 years of absolutely hell among the yearlings for the coal industry. They got to do whatever they wanted to do. So after sliming Governor Marlin with allegations of alcoholism, Cecil Underwood finished his career living the dream, as it were. Big thanks going out to Ron. Thank you very kindly, Ron. Ron has taken care of tonight's fundraising. We're done fundraising for this evening. If we want to get ahead on tomorrow and stay, you know, on that little lump of ground that's a little higher than ground level, there's $150 out there to go. So thank you very kindly for finishing out the day, Ron. It is much appreciated. Let's go to the phones, I think. Stand by. Hey, welcome to the program.
What's up, Bob?
What's happening, Jim?
Oh, not much. Just listening to that little story you just related. That's so true. Anytime you go against anything, any big power like that, it'll destroy you. I mean, in the press, so-called free press, that's a joke.
Well, you're calling from Louisiana, Stan.
Yeah.
Consider for a moment what the press tried to do to Huey Long.
Oh yeah. Well,
because he was stepping on some big money toes.
Yeah, and to my father when he came out with going against the standard story with the JFK assassination.
Yeah, there you go.
I lived it. You look on Twitter.
Oh, they tried their best to destroy your dad, didn't they?
Yeah. Well, he even set up false charges. Set up a false. He supposedly received pinball bribes, but the guy they got to set him up was an old World War II buddy who they had things on him. So they said, "We don't want you. We want Garrison." And then. So he wore a bug, and then they spliced the tapes to make it seem like which he wasn't. And then, but anyway, long story short, he was acquitted of that. And then about a year or two later, they brought him up on charges of not paying taxes on income taxes on the bribes he didn't receive. He was acquitted of receiving. And, he beat that, and then he did get reelected. He got elected to Court of Appeals. Judge in Louisiana, and and along the way you end up alienating a lot of rich and powerful people too. So, kind of, even if you're practicing law, it can change that. You can end up driving a taxi cab, so to say.
Yes, indeed, absolutely.
And then
that's the kind of thing, Jim. Just to put a bow on this. That's why the likes of Natalie Tennant and Nick Rahal and other Democrats won't dare say anything against Cole, even if it's absolutely the truth. I mean, one of the best cases in point is John D. Rockefeller IV, who will be at the end of this year retiring after a long career as a senator from West Virginia, J. Rockefeller. The first time that man ran for governor,
he ran with his morals intact. And he said that surface mining was a scourge that had to be stopped. And he got beaten like a barred mule. And after that, he said he would never be out cold again. And he became a friend of coal, real lickety-split quick-like.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't even do it. You'd have to educate the people, and the people are too busy eking out existence every day. I mean, it's just like there's really no difference between the Democrats and Republicans, although the Democrats are a lot less damaging. Yeah, I mean, it's like down here, you got Mary Landrieu with two other people running for senator, and it's a very important Senate seat, although Mary Landrieu is not nearly as liberal as I'd like, and I don't even like using the word liberal, you know, but progressive, leftist, social Democrat. But, yeah, that's not going to happen. And it's like, Moises, until the system finally collapses, I unfortunately don't really see people getting the wherewithal. And even then, they're going to be so clueless. I think it's going to be like 1984, where they just come up with some other Big Brother system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I hope I'm wrong, but maybe I've been listening to Malloy read 1984 too much lately.
Well, it's fun to listen to, though. Mike does a great job with it.
But also, I was going to point out, you know, considering all the environmental degradation due to, the centuries of, just burning coal and fossil fuels and stuff, and the fact that is finally leading to temperature change. I wonder, just that little temperature change, I'm just thinking from an environmental point of view, and I've been bouncing around in my head for a while, a plant species or an animal species lives in a certain area, but most of that's because of the climate, the temperature's just right, and you just change that a little bit, that animal, that plant can't grow.
Everything goes sideways.
Yeah, and I guess it's kind of happening here, but it's so slow you don't notice it. But you can't really point that out to people because their eyes just glaze over.
And that's the eternal question, Jim. There are some people who are going to say, no, there ain't no climate change. Jesus will protect us no matter how much we heat up the planet. And those people, you're not going to be able to do a damn thing with, Jim. You got to just drive the bus on without them. But there are some people that we need to educate. And
yeah, well, I mean, go ahead.
No, I was saying, but okay. So there's the Jesus bunch, and then there's the bunch that have simply been. Well, then denying climate change is a part of their confirmation bias. They are right-wingers, and to be a right-winger, you have to deny climate change, and therefore they deny climate change. It has nothing to do with science. It has nothing to do with reality. You know, if they happen to be climate science deniers in South Florida, when the water's up to their neck, they're going to be hollering, "Rescue me." And they will get into the boat denying climate change. I mean, here it is, mid-October, and there is a humdinger of a hurricane out in the Atlantic by the name of Gonzalo, I do believe, that is going to absolutely slobber-knock Bermuda, and some of the computer models say it could just, hang a left at Bermuda and knock the snot out of the mid-Atlantic coast.
Yeah, kind of like that one hit New Jersey, New York a while back, and that's way far up, and that's, I remember that hurricane, and that's way late in the season. I mean, I grew up right here, so hurricane season was basically August, September. Now it seems you have these late October storms, and just like the one there. It's a lot, you know, you can try and point that out, but people, my memory works that way. I remember stuff like that. Other people don't seem to pay attention to it. You know, I mean, it's like, I got two brothers, one conservative, basically, lawyer, corporate lawyer, the other one it works basically fighting the oil companies. But both of them, I mean, what I'd like to do ideally with them is both, you know, trick them into a room with some chairs, with some Clockwork Orange, like Alex.
Oh, yeah, with the little eyelid things and, yeah.
Yeah, you give them an ultraviolet thing, but introduce them to 3 hours of you and 3 hours of Mike Floyd.
But depending on who they are, Jim, I don't know that that's going to affect any sort of change.
Exactly, and would take too many shows.
Yeah, possibly.
And even the liberal one, he just thinks, well, the system, the legal system, it'll eventually work its way through. I'm like, dude, don't you see what's happening to the courts? I mean, that's another thing that they don't seem to mention much in corporate media. Haven't a plethora of Obama's appointments to the courts been delayed?
Let's take it a step further from that, Jim. I'm glad you brought that up because Tim's brought it up, Carol's brought it up. So we're in the midst of the great American Ebola EGADS freakout, right?
Right.
You think it might be handy to have a Surgeon General?
Exactly. That was another thing I was thinking of, yeah.
You think it might be able to have? It might be handy to have the National Institutes of Health and the Centers for Disease Control and a few other health-based organizations, health-focused organizations. You think it might be handy to have those fully funded instead of having their goddamn budgets cut by a bunch of Republicans who want small effing government? You know what? In Texas, Jim, I'm sorry you opened the door. I got the soapbox out. In Texas, they got to have them some small government. They want them some small government. And here in America, they want them some small government. Well, you know what? You got Ebola cases in the United States now. Congratulations. How you liking your small government now, you freaking dead from the neck up right-wing nitwits?
Exactly. That's it. That also goes back to that big fire at that plant and that one-horse town where basically there's no town anymore because some sort of...
Oh, yeah. You mean the fertilizer plant that blew to Mars in West Texas?
Yeah.
Yeah, they had a beautiful, I mean, I saw it. I saw it, courtesy of Dr. Allen. I saw it. They had a beautiful, I mean beautiful, would be the envy of anywhere in the country, high school and middle school. It's got to go. The whole thing's poison. They had fences around it to keep people from getting near it because it's poison. And there's, and that again is thanks to small government because we don't want none of them job-killing regulations, Andy. Look at, hey, I got my new haircut. Feel my, it's all slickety in the back. Jesus Christ, the Republican Party's being run by Ernest E. Bass.
Yeah, and like I said, you can't even really try and talk to people about it because they've been taken over by this. The whole thing about this whole free enterprise, like everybody, it's like if everybody became an Amway distributor. Eventually, somebody's going to have nobody to sell Amway crap to. And to me, that's like the whole capitalist system. And the other thing I've noticed is that I mentioned it to you, these commercials were on MSNBC early in the morning. They'll have them about these little spots about these little entrepreneurs. And that's fine and dandy. And sometimes that works, but the majority, I think it's 90-some-odd% of those quote-unquote lucrative businesses don't go anywhere. I mean, particularly if you're right opening up right next to Walmart or something like that.
Yeah. So, Meanwhile, are people deep down there where you are? I mean, are people wandering around talking about it? I mean,
no, not really. I mean, I rarely bring it up. Yeah, I mean, my little job. They know I'm kind of the radical, and they know not to bring up religion around me. I've got my little gym atheist right.
Oh, so you've got a bubble.
Right, you know. And also, I saw the guy, Russell Brand. You've heard of him, the comedian?
Oh, yeah, yeah. His little set two with the Fox News building.
Yeah, I saw that on Twitter, and then he's got that new thing. But he's kind of a deist, kind of like, dude, that's the vibe I kind of got from what I watched. He's got a little spiritual thing, which is fine. If that works for you, but because he mentioned like Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, what's the other guy from India? Gandhi.
Yeah.
And I think one other, Malcolm X, too. I heard him talk, and I saw it on Twitter. And I don't know. It sounds kind of interesting, but when you start getting on a super spiritual level, I don't know, it kind of loses me. I used to kind of go there, but I just can't really go there anymore. You know, I just think that's it. I don't think there's any hereafter. Yeah.
Well,
maybe I'll be surprised.
I saw a report saying that some scientist has figured out the source of our spirituality, so of human spirituality or whatever. So, you know, who knows? Who knows? I'm pretty sure about one thing. If there's an organized religion that says they have the answer, they're probably lying to you.
I got that.
And it might be a 1,400-year-old lie, or a 2,000-year-old lie, or, you know, a 3,500-year-old lie, or, you know, a 5,000-year-old lie. But it's all, you know, it's all, look, it's social control. It's not about getting you anywhere, because otherwise it wouldn't be as easy to get there as they make it out to seem.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I kind of like about Scientology, because they just go really out the box. What is it, 10,020, some distant planet?
Well, it just says Mormonism, though. I mean, you know, Kolob.
Yeah, yeah. All right, well, let me let you go. Thanks for keeping me, what's the word they use in Scientology, balanced? Is that the word?
Yeah, I don't know, or your prions or your Knuton valves or whatever are all functioning properly, right? Yeah. Hey, you got any smoky ghost pepper cheese left?
No.
Ooh.
I'm gonna have to order up that what you would call it, that stuff you talk about, bacon thing.
Oh, the Benton's bacon. That. Yeah, we need to work out a deal with them. All right, Jim, you have a good evening.
All right.
Bye now. Oh, or was Jim thinking about the Kaneka sausage? That's another big one. And you know what? Something else. Over in Ohio, you guys are lucky. You know, just this past weekend, they had the Nut Festival over in, well, it's actually the Black Walnut Festival over in Spencer, West Virginia, which used to be the home of one of the massive. And at one point in time, the building itself was the longest continuous brick building in the United States or something. Massive, massive mental health institution. And so, you know, a lot of people shorten it from Black Walnut Festival just to the Nut Festival. Never mind. But anyway, it's a little carnival, a little street fair, that kind of thing. And every year there's an outfit there that comes and does Italian sausage subs, and they've got this beautiful bread, food porn segment, by the way, and this delicious Italian sausage. The name of the company is DiRusso's, DiRusso's. It's quite probably the best Italian sausage I've ever eaten. And it's their own recipe, and good. I mean some kind of. Let's keep things rolling. Go to the phones over on the Skype line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, what's happening, Kevin?
Not much. I'm going to be real short. I swallowed a chicken bone and scratched my throat pretty bad, but I had to follow up on what Jim was saying and what you were saying about the Atlantic hurricane season. I grew up on the Gulf Coast in Tampa. Jim's in Louisiana, and I'm sure even though you weren't on the Gulf Coast, being in Alabama, you're aware of it.
No, but the after effects of a good Gulf Coast striking hurricane.
I went through one of those back in 80-something in Birmingham.
Yeah, it gets a few hundred miles up into the countryside pretty quick.
Yeah, but I don't know what site. I can't remember the site, but this site was saying that the hurricane season, the peak of the hurricane season, was October. And I was just like, that is just propaganda. The weather's changing, and so to fit the changes rather than admit to any kind of global warming climate change, you now change the story to say the peak of the hurricane season is October. It's August, September, it starts in June, and it's November 30th. And for the Gulf Coast, our two biggest months of worry were August, September. We do occasionally have late year-end storms, but they're rare, just like this one that's about to hit Bermuda. And I just, you know, I don't know how many people pay attention to it, but it sure struck me wrong when I heard that because I grew up knowing better. You know,
yeah.
There was a little slim back in 69 called Camille.
Yep. And, you know, for years and years and years when you drove through Biloxi, you could still see a boat way the hell up on shore that had been deposited there by Camille that nobody ever got around to moving.
Yeah. Well, should be a reminder. It should have been left there as a reminder of what these storms can do and how much this has changed. Jim was talking about that storm that hit the northeast. How many years ago was that? Two, three?
Sandy was October the 29th, 2012, because that was 3 months to the day after the derecho knocked the snot out of us, and then we got a foot of snow in, you know, a couple of hours.
Right. And so, I don't know about 13, I can't remember, but that's 2 out of the 4 years now, we've had a major Atlantic storm in October. I fail to remember a time in my lifetime, anyway, that we've had major storms that late in the year. And for someone to say that the peak of the hurricane season is late September, October, just, you know, I was more than a bit upset about that. Before I go, I want to ask you, do you know anything about a show called Citizen Radio?
No. I don't think so, no.
Well, I saw it on Twitter last night, and I tried to download the podcast of it, but I wasn't able to find the link for the podcast. I saw links to stories in that, but I didn't see the podcast. It looks like it's a liberal show, but I'm not sure. And I was hoping if anyone in the Horn family is getting information, feel free to pass my email along to them so they can send me a link. I would appreciate that. So, and that's all I have because I ain't got much of a voice left. So I will go for now and listen to the rest of the show.
All right, sounds good, Kevin. You take it easy.
Okay, take care, Bob.
Thanks. Bye now. My buddy Kevin calling from Colorado Springs. And, yeah, the both lines are open, either 304-574-8178 or Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype, or on the Gizmo line, 304-663-HORN, 304-663-H-O-R-N, 304-663-4676. Let's see. Just a second here. There we go. All better now. Nice note coming in from GK in Minnesota. Hey, Bob. I'd sort of forgotten about the rolling coal goobers till today. Yes, I had my first rolling coal sighting here in Minnesota the other day. This moron had the catchy moniker, Mind if I smoke? Witty devils, are they not? Asks GK. Oh, I was thinking more like witless devils, but devils, either way. A lot of questions coming in about the contribute page and the amount of data that it asks for. All of that stuff is to make it possible just to log into PayPal, if that kind of thing makes you a little bit queasy. You can always simply go to your own PayPal account and then do the send thing and just use bobkincaid@gmail.com as the recipient address, and that'll make things, and then choose sending money to friends or family, and it'll make things equally simpler. I will, however, talk to John about that and see if we can do anything. And, you know, plus we also need to just get a button straight up on the main page. Thanks for raising the issues, though, Ron and Sal, both. Appreciate it. Let's see. Hey, how about some thorn in the side intellect? You know that one of our favorite right-wing idiots is none other than North Central Tennessee's Marsha Blackburn. Remember her? She's the one who says, "Goodness! Goodness!" Well, it's apparently Ebola freakout time in the Marsha Blackburn office, too. The Obama administration keeps sending the public health officials out to try to explain to people very slowly in small words what's going on. Or, for instance, how banning travel, banning aircraft from West Africa would actually make matters worse instead of better. Yeah, oh, well, it doesn't work. So the other day, the director of the CDC, a man named Thomas Frieden, said exactly that, that banning travel from West Africa, from Guinea, Liberia, Sierra Leone, was not a good idea. And he explained why. This then triggered this little thorn from Marsha Blackburn, super genius.
For 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Frieden, I want to be sure I heard you right. You just said to Chairman Upton that we cannot have flight restrictions because of a porous border. So do we need to worry about having an unsecure southern and northern border? Is that a big...
Ooh, what? No, stop! No, she really, that's not, and that's not some send up of Marsha Blackburn. That's really Marsha Blackburn. And he was telling her, he was telling the panel, the House panel, that if we were to impose a travel ban, then people would start trying to sneak out of Liberia, Sierra Leone, and Guinea and cross the porous national borders that those small countries have into other African nations, which would then spread Ebola even further and could probably light the entire continent on fire. But you know how it is with a damn teabagger, right? These poor things, they hear border and all the... they hear the word border and, man, it's mariachi music like that. What? And consequently, you get the true genius of Marsha Blackburn. Let's try again and see if I can keep my wits about me.
For 5 minutes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Frieden, I want to be sure I heard you right. You just said to Chairman Upton that we cannot have flight restrictions because of a porous border. So do we need to worry about having an unsecure southern and northern border? Is that a big part of this problem?
I was referring to the border of the three countries in Africa.
You're referring
Liberia,
to that border, not our
Guinea,
porous border.
Guinea, Sierra Leone.
Mr. Wagner, would it help you all, the Border Patrol, if we secured the southern border and eliminated illegal entry?
Well, travelers coming across the southern border, like the northern border, we're going to, you know, query their information in our databases. We're going to ask them their travel history, where they're coming from, how they arrived in the country they're coming from.
Was sufficient. I need to move on.
You're not giving the right answer. Goodness!
But you notice how she did get, he used the phrase porous borders of the African countries. So necessarily, she had to refer to our porous borders. But, you know, Africa, America, they both begin with A, right? It's just, there's a beauty to it, really, that amount of stupid. Irish Dave pointing out, no worries, Marsha. Them Canadians don't let no Ebolers into Canada. I blame the Obama for not securing the Sierra Leone border with the U.S. Is it still too early to get out the tequila and the swirly straw? Jumping, Jehoshaphat. Let's keep things rolling. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? You're live on the air.
Flash.
Anybody? Bueller? All right, let's try the other line. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello? I know.
Hello?
There we are. I know this thing works.
Okay. This is Bill.
Well, hi, Bill.
I was calling. I kind of waited until the end of the week to throw out for the community what was the general impression of the Chris Hayes series on coal.
Okay.
Because I will tell you right now, he kind of lost me when he had Don Blankenship on.
Well, what do you mean he lost you?
I just thought, no. Why does he have Don Blankenship on for this series that he is promoted for two and a half weeks? And I was amazed at how much time Don got.
Well, obviously it was not my call, and I don't even necessarily know that it was Chris's. But you got it. You need a villain, and there's no bigger villain than he is. And so I guess I understand it from that perspective. But you know, if you're going to talk, Bill, about the good things that we can have if we get shed of coal, Well, one of those good things is getting shed of the likes of Don Blankenship, isn't it?
Well, I guess this was just kind of leading into another issue I have. And I have listened to you earlier on, and I remember specifically the Kevin Williams or Kevin Williamson article about Appalachia, the white ghetto, the ghetto, or whatever he had.
That right winger, yeah.
Yes, you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, the guy that had mamas pushing around entire baskets full of Pepsi with their food stamp money because they was going to sell it on the Pepsi black market in eastern Kentucky.
Right. Exactly. Bob, do you know when I first ever heard of him? Before, when you brought him up on your show in that article, he was on Chris Hayes' show.
Really?
And I'm starting to have real problems. You know, you don't have folks like that on your show. And for the 60 minutes that Chris has on his show, to bring people like him on, and I can give you a whole bunch of other names. I've called MSNBC and complained about this. You know, Keith never had him on his show.
Well, it's a philosophical thing. And also remember, we're dealing with network television, and they're trying to figure out what gets ratings.
Well, okay, you know what I call it? I call it verbal masturbation.
Well, yeah, but let's not sit here and pretend that the only person who does that is Chris.
Okay, no, Rachel doesn't do it.
No, but I know.
They won't come on Rachel's show. Chris was better served on his Saturday morning show when he could bring those people on and banter back and forth and have that. I don't want to tie up the lines too long.
Oh, you're fine.
I just thought that I expected more for the way he promoted it and the way it was promoted. And like I'm telling you, I've called MSNBC and I've called, and it's just like, you know what? Why does he have all of these conservatives? Josh Barrows, I can give you a whole list of people. I tell you what, look at how few, and I really lost part of this argument last night when I watched the replay today because he had John Nichols on.
Yeah.
Okay. How few of his nation compatriots does he have on his show now compared to conservatives who are more comfortable on Fox? And I'm back to, he wants to bring them on and banter with them and all the rest of it.
Well, for instance, with the Blankenship thing, the nice thing is that he absolutely destroyed him. And
Don got on his website, okay, he started off that interview with him giving the web address of his upper big branch movie.
Oh yeah, and the thing is, it just made him look like a fool.
Well, okay, I like I said, I waited until today to see if anybody else in the commune felt the same way I did, and I'm just like, you know, I'm gonna call because it really bothered.
Let's work that for just a minute though, Bill. I have a different operating philosophy here, and I formed it a very long time ago. I don't watch wrestling on TV because it's a format that doesn't speak to me.
Amen.
And I don't particularly care. And I know for a fact, and granted, the statistic is old, but it was valid at the time it was offered years and years and years ago here on the Horn. Maybe it's better, maybe it's worse, but this was actually when Air America was still on the air. That there are 1,000 hours of right-wing gut bucket hate for every hour of progressive broadcasting. So for
I
that,
agree.
So for that reason, we created the horn as a no wing nut space. Right wingers are not allowed on this program. I don't like hanging up on people, but if somebody was to call this program and start in with the, close the borders, teabaggery, I'm pretty good at spotting the issues. It's going to be click because they are simply not allowed. And I don't have a call screener or an engineer. It's just a matter of.
That's why I love you. And I'm really, really I mean, Chris.
But understand, Bill, my position is not a majority, position. I cannot tell you the number of emails that I get from other people talking about another particular, progressive radio host who absolutely has a penchant for bringing on wing nuts like, Phyllis Schlafly or, Brian Fisher. And somehow demonstrating his superior intellect by you know demolishing their arguments or so he thinks. Maybe it gets ratings, but that's the beauty of this community and the internet format. I don't have to worry about ratings. The only thing I want to do is create a safe and comfortable space for people to talk about what's on their mind and occasionally maybe even look for solutions. So that's where it breaks out for me. Do I think I could have carried 30 minutes on that program? Yes.
Yeah, me too. And I guess that's what really cutting to the quick. That's what really bothered me was how little time that you had as opposed to Don. And I'll tell you right now, I bless his heart. You're always talking about Rand Paul and that thing on his head.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry, Cecil Roberts, and that thing on your head, okay? You know,
now, ain't no thing on my head, Bill.
No, I'm talking about Cecil.
Oh, okay. You think Cecil's got a head weasel too?
Oh God, please. Yeah, Cecil was bald when he went into mines. That banter back and forth, yes, 30 minutes of you, 15 minutes of you, as opposed to either one of those two, would have made that a much better series.
Well, I think that's mighty kind of you to say that, and if the opportunity ever arises, hopefully there will be more time.
All right.
Yeah, we can just cross our fingers. You know, at least I didn't say booger or anything, so I don't think I've been banned.
I just wanted to see if anybody else felt the same way I did. If they don't,
that's
sticking to it.
You know, that's the thing. You know, Malloy, I can't remember the last time I heard some wingnut ass hat on Malloy's program either.
Right.
And I don't think Rick Smith, I don't recall Rick Smith inviting on any weirdos.
No, he does not. No. And I'm just, Josh Burrows, I can name him. When you came on and pointed out that article that Kevin D. Williamson had wrote, I'm just like, well, damn. You know, Chris Hayes just had him on his show, you know, sitting there just like they were old time. But and it's maybe intellectually the compadres. But if you read that article, there's no way in hell he'd ever appear on a legitimate progressive show.
I don't know quite how to respond to that because there's no doubt in my mind that Chris is a legitimate progressive. I thought so.
I've read Chris in the Nation for years, and it's just like, does something happen to people when they get on?
Yeah, you know what happens, Bill? Network executives happen.
Well,
does that make sense?
Yes, it does, Bob. Thank you for your time.
Oh, my pleasure. You call anytime. All right.
Okay. Bye.
All right,
have a good evening.
You too. Bye now. A minute past the hour of 8 o'clock. Let's try to keep the so that phone line is clear, 304-574-8178 if you want to reach the program, or Bob Kincaid Horn. Let's go back and try the gizmo line. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, yes. How are you?
Ah, there's Bill.
Yeah, I was messing around with these phones. My hearing is not what it should be. I keep hearing screaming high E's on the guitar, you know?
Oh, that's rough.
Well, yeah, well, I always preferred going with five pieces. You get two guitars that can play. One guy in the first big group, one guy can play like Mike Broomfield, and the other guy would play everything. You know, so that guy do a job on Ronnie Mac's version of Memphis, the other guitar player. He could play that one. Oof. I miss that stuff, but that's the way it goes, you know. What the hell is going on with this Ebola virus? Are they trying to scare people to death or what?
Did you hear me talking to Bill number one back there a minute ago, and I said network executives happen? Well, that's what I mean. I think from a broadcast standpoint, I think that's part of what happened. I mean, when Shepard Smith over at Fox calls out his own network for trying to terrorize the public with Ebola stuff, then I think the cat's pretty well out of the bag, don't you?
Yep. Yeah, of course it's Obama's fault, you know.
Oh, of course it is. Everything is. The Lindbergh baby kidnapping is. Who killed Cock Robin is his fault.
Yes, exactly. I'm not crazy about hurting the man that done, that's for sure.
I mean, somebody handed me
we were getting FDR, you know?
Somebody handed me a lukewarm cup of decaf at McDonald's a couple of days ago, and I tasted it, and I realized it was lukewarm, and I thought, Obama!
It's his fault.
Yeah, I mean, we need congressional hearings, you know? I mean, I got that sip of cold coffee, and I thought, God, Benghazi!
Benghazi. Yeah, when you say Benghazi, to me, I right away think of the Desert Fox himself.
Right, sure. Other people think of things that you rub on an aching knee.
Oh, yeah, yeah, but I remember those, cartoons in the Benji commercials in the Sunday newspaper with, you know, they throw one into there. To the comic section, you know? God. Yeah, it's just, sometimes I feel like I must have been living in another planet. Because I remember all the discussions about environmental stuff in the 60s, and me, I was thinking, well, these guys will never let this go too far, these companies, because they're cutting their own throats economically. But I found out I was sure wrong, Bob. Because, let me ask you some questions about coal. When did coal become the big thing in the energy area of this country's history? What era?
Coal? Coal was the first, yeah. I mean, you know, after whale oil, you know, coal was the first, the next great energy source.
Yeah, I remember coal oil lamps. I can't remember what years were those. What was going on with coal and state of West Virginia when the state of West Virginia pulled out of the Confederacy?
Well, we separated from Virginia more. 1863, yeah. It wasn't that well developed. It was 1745 when it was first discovered in the Coal River Valley by a man named John Peter Sally. But there was no infrastructure for getting it to market. And it never dawned on anybody to actually use the stuff here. You know, where we were here was simply, it is and always has been, a resource colony. In Virginia, which this was part of before the Civil War, slave owners were sending their slaves to dig coal. The first underground coal miners in America were Africa, or among them were African American slaves.
Oh, yeah.
And that, you know, that, and Jeff Biggers has detailed that, and that needs a lot more noise made about it.
Yep. Because that's what I really like, that they've always liked cheap labor in this country, haven't they?
It's the essence of conservatism, Bill. Cheap labor.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, just, we thought we were getting an FDR with Obama, but...
Maybe some did. I didn't. I got my eyes wide open, Bill, and when candidate Obama, and again, I have Jeff Biggers to thank for this, for pointing it out to me, when candidate Obama was sashaying around southern Illinois and eastern Ohio and western Pennsylvania and areas near to West Virginia talking about how he wanted these places to become the Saudi Arabia of coal, you know, I kind of had a pretty good idea what kind of writing was on the wall. Now, as for me, as I've said before, I don't want to be the Saudi Arabia of anything.
Yes.
Because I think Saudi Arabia is a pretty disgusting place. Or at least the royal family thereof is a pretty disgusting bunch. And the right-wing religious zealots there are a pretty repulsive bunch. I don't want to be no Saudi Arabia.
I wonder, how did Saudi Arabia come out of that mess at the end of World War One, and they didn't have to put up with the crap that everybody else had to put up with in the Middle East? How did they pull that one off, Bob?
Is that rhetorical or actual? Because I think you know the answer.
No, I really don't know. Was it military power, or was it strictly oil? Because Iraq has plenty of oil. Kuwait had plenty of oil. And, the British went into Mesopotamia. What was it? Mesopotamia was the name during World War One, that area.
Well, the Greeks named it that. It's actually a Greek word.
Oh, okay.
Land between the rivers. Specifically, it refers to the land between the Tigris and the Euphrates. But no, it was, you know, with the rise of oil, you know, first there's the rise of coal, then there's the rise of oil, and then the oil gets discovered in places other than, there's a Texas oil boom. You know, the first oil boom in the United States was in Pennsylvania.
And then it
gets discovered down here in West Virginia as well. And it gets discovered in Texas, and everything takes off. Then you get the rise of Standard Oil through the Rockefellers. But then it gets discovered in what was then Persia. And it gets discovered in the Arabian Peninsula.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, things get real interesting.
I know there's a lot of coal in North Vietnam, believe it or not.
I had no idea.
Yeah, there is. Coal was, I tell you, I buy my coffee from a Vietnamese delicatessen that sells that Japanese Duong from New Orleans, you know.
God, I love that stuff.
Culture, you know?
And it's the funniest thing. I can never think to order that stuff. I mean, I can order it online, but I never think to. The Café Du Monde decaf with chicory is magnificent. Oh, it's wonderful.
I still drink the caffeinated. I only do about, Bob, I would take 4-quart metal thermoses to work when I was playing. I'd drink that stuff, and then if I was drinking anything else, I had what looked like a glass of water, and it was Tanqueray.
Yeah. So you never pulled the old W.C. Fields bit where you poured your thermos, poured out of your thermos, took a sip, and who put the coffee in my coffee?
Yeah. Well, people thought everybody thought the coffee was booze. Well, if I could put away 4 quarts of booze a night, I wouldn't be able to stand up.
Well, I don't think we'd be having this conversation right now, Bill.
No, no. I mean, the thing is, I never drank at home. I just didn't. Gin was a socially acceptable drink if you're playing blues. This is expected of you. But getting back to the old Middle East there, I had a landlord who would come in every couple of weeks. He was divorced. He'd had a place upstairs at a place I had, and he'd go up with his family for a couple of days. But he went to Saudi Arabia. He set up a hospital there. That was his job, was to set up this whole big hospital. So there's plenty of dough there. How much of it gets down to the working class in Saudi?
You just wandered off into the desert there, Bill, because the working class in Saudi Arabia is largely comprised of indentured servitude, indentured slaves from India, Pakistan, and Southeast Asia, like Indonesia and Malaysia.
That's who's doing the work, yeah.
Yeah, that's who's doing the work. That's who's doing the work in Dubai. That's who's doing the work in Qatar, you know, the UAE. And the middle class, they ain't building anything. They're not putting up buildings. They're not plumbing anything.
So how does the average Saudi Arabian citizen, how do they make their living? Off the oil? Getting part of it or what? So just running the show?
The Saudi royal family is large.
Yeah.
And because it is, and I'm not trying to be xenophobic or anything, because it's a tribal culture, everybody gets a slice.
Yeah.
And the royal family actually is quite liberal in its spending of its oil revenues, because that's how they keep their necks attached to their heads. That's why they've got the deal with the devil that they made with the Wahhabists, who run around beating up women for being out by themselves and have fainting spells over a woman behind the wheel of an automobile.
The Wahhabists are the damn nastiest of the bunch. They're the ones that, I hate to say this, because what it amounts to, I don't want to make it sound like it's ethnic. They're just as crazy as the Bible Belters.
Right, again, and I've said it exactly, Bill, and I've said it a million times. Let's say it again. It's not the particular religion, although I think there's an element of insanity to all religions. It is not the particular religion. It is the fundamentalist manifestation thereof. A fundamentalist Baptist is, you know, crazier than an outhouse rat. The Salafists and the Wahhabists, who are kind of kissing cousins, are equally fundamentalistly evil and nasty. A fundamentalist Hindu is a problem. I don't know if you know about Jainism, but you know, these are people who won't step on a bug, okay? Because it fucks up their karma. There are fundamentalist Jains. And a couple of years ago, they were running around torching restaurants for serving meat.
Oh, boy. That's nice.
Yeah, and that was, of course, India. It's the fundament, and fundamentalism itself is an inability to cope with a much more complex present than their holy books are able to advise them on how to live in. So you just say, well, you know, it's the literal word of God, and the earth is 6,000 years old, and there's no such thing as climate change. And you know, it's an elaborately constructed mythological bubble, Bill.
Yeah. It's one big hoax, isn't it?
It's a hustle.
Everybody,
I mean, you know a hustle. I mean, you know, Ms. Miller didn't raise no dummy. You know a hustle when one's being put on you.
Oh, sure.
Well, these fundamentalist religions are a hustle. Look at the story about Ernest Angley from last night that we talked about. What kind of intellectual Lilliputian do you have to be to swallow all of that lock, stock, and barrel to the point that that, and again, he's got, and, you know, then again, there's Ernest, and he's got a head weasel, too. You know, but he's got a head weasel on a freaking 747.
And the guy he bought the place from was much more of your standard, run-of-the-mill, probably Baptist religion, you know?
Rex Humbard was a hustler in his own right.
Yeah, he did well, that's for sure, yes. So there was a guy here who took over an abandoned movie theater in the 150th Euclid area, because there were four big movies down there. That whole area was...
Is that what the Grace Cathedral is? It's an old movie house?
No.
Oh.
No.
Standalone. Okay.
That was the Holy Oil Can, you mean? The one church where it looks like an oil can up on the top?
Yeah, okay.
You know, yeah, that's what we call it around here for years, the Holy Oil Can. Because, I mean, that whole 105th Street in Euclid area was prime. And when I was... about 1718, it became the Storyville of the area. And me being an adventuresome little bastard, I spent a lot of time down there and learned a lot. You know, some things were, you know, not what they should have been, but in a way, my youth was a continuation of maybe, and then it merged into the hippie thing. So it's two different times and places, you know, when you... And the damn reading was a terrible thing. I'm still looking for books that I can't find. Just two up to the site center that I haven't put on. One was Street Without Joy by the same guy that wrote the thing on the Indian food. In fact, this guy was killed when he was traveling with the American Army in their version of that war. He was shot accidentally. But I picked that up by accident, and that was my introduction to the Vietnam War, was reading about what the French were doing between 46 and 54. And in fact, they took one of the nurses from Dien Bien Phu, and they brought her to Congress. And they also, the Wounded Warrior thing was being used as far back as that, bringing guys in. The big thing about Dien Bien Phu is that it spoke with a German accent, the Foreign Legion. But on the other hand, the Legion had its uses. Maybe you would have a good use with this ISA bunch, you know. Keep your own people out of this. That's why when the draft ended, I said,
you bring up ISIL, Bill, and I ran across a rather interesting story earlier today. Apparently, some Kurdish folks who were defending Kobani against ISIL actually captured one of the little assholes.
Yeah.
And so, for several days, for some period of time, they held him captive. And all the guy would tell them was to go ahead and kill him, so that he could go to paradise with his brother martyrs. And eventually they obliged him and walked him out into the street and blew his brains out. But part of the Agence France-Presse story that I find interesting is that somewhere along the way, the person describing said, he said again and again that we were the infidel and he wanted to go to paradise to find the 40 women who had been promised to him. I thought it was 72, but maybe they're cutting back because of a glut of potential martyrs. I don't know. But that led me to think, Bill, now these guys are young, okay? There's not a whole lot of 59-year-old ISIL fighters. Generally speaking, in wars, you don't have a bunch of old guys down there in the trenches shooting at each other. They're sitting back in the officer's club, clinking glasses.
Well, they don't have them, unfortunately. And those guys.
Well, yeah, and these guys, these guys can't even have a beer, poor bastards. But I saw that line about, you know, just go ahead and shoot me so I can go get my 40 women. You know, because here on Earth, the prophet says you can't have more than four wives.
Well,
four wives. Yeah. Yeah.
Being a real misogynist, having four wives in the same house, I can't.
Right. Yeah, I got. Yeah, it's like the old line. I got two wives, and it's mighty bigamy. But anyway, I couldn't help thinking, Bill, when I read that line about him wanting to go to paradise and get his 40 women, this is probably some kid who never had a chance, who wasn't educated worth a damn, who was taught to read out of the Quran, and couldn't get a woman to look twice at him on a dare. And I don't want to be taken the wrong way here. I do not want to come across as misogynistic.
Yes.
But if the poor kid could have just had a little bit of paradise by the dashboard light, he might not have felt the urge to kill people to get to the imaginary one. Does that make any sense?
Yeah. So to speak. Sorry, bad choice of words, Bob. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember a concert I attended once where Jimmy Buffett suggested we could defeat the Soviet Union by flying over and dropping $100 bills attached to Victoria's Secret catalogs.
Yeah, good. Well, from, you know, the pictures of Russian women we saw in the 50s, Bob.
Oh.
They were like tickets to a monastery, you know?
Yeah, and you don't see those. No, and the pictures you see now of Russian women want you. I mean, it's all over the web. But really, you know, consider these guys. They are radicalized by a fundamentalist form of their religion that tells them that sex is filthy and dirty and nasty. But they can have all they want if they'll just kill themselves.
Yeah.
Or get killed in the name of the faith. What a hustle! Like I said, you know a hustle when one's being presented to you. That, by God, is a hustle.
Yep, the whole thing. What do you think the backbone of this thing can come from? What happened to the Iraqi army?
Well, we painted a rosy fantasy picture for ourselves back during the Bush administration. Remember when he would say, "When they stand up, we'll stand down."
Yeah.
Right. So we, out of a sense of desperation to get the F out of there, because we knew we weren't doing any good. Well, what happened? Was that we talked ourselves into thinking that these alleged Iraqi soldiers that we had trained and equipped were going to be up to the task, but they weren't. And then that was a matter of self-delusion. And then coupled to that is the fact that it was a Shia majority government that was having a field day getting even with the Sunnis who had shit on for the last 50, 60 years. And guess what?
And that's right.
That ain't going to work.
I keep coming back to that. Is it Sunni versus Shia? Is this still continuing?
Oh, yeah. But now it's Sunni versus Shia versus Salafi.
Yeah.
ISIL are Salafi. Now, my favorite Muslims are the Sufis. Because they're all,
yes.
You know, they're all introspective and poetry writing and you know, the great Sufi poet Rumi, translations of his work read like it was written by Lawrence Ferlinghetti and Allen Ginsberg. But again, it's all religion, and I ain't signing on with none of them.
Yeah, my first wife and I went to see Ferlinghetti at a lecture that he gave. Quite a man, quite an interesting guy. But in other words, is this thing going to continue forever? One little group against another? Well, we have the same problems here.
Let's look at it this way. It was the 16th, 17th century, I think it was the 17th century, when the, Hundred Years' War or whatever it was got finally brought to a close by the Peace of Westphalia and the treaties of Munster and Osnabrück. Those and that created the idea of the European nation state. But again, it was an idea that worked for Europe. Okay. We have tried to transpose that onto the Middle East. And I don't know if it necessarily works, Bill.
I don't know if it'll ever work. Because people seem to find some reason or another, the more religious they are, sounds like Wednesday night, huh?
Look at the ancient Greeks, for instance. The Athenians invent democracy. Well, if democracy was so great, why didn't the Romans adopt it? Hint, they didn't. They invented the Republic, which was basically an old wealth power structure that would dole out dribs and drabs of power to the plebs. I mean, plebs is a Roman word. And then, lo and behold, you get the founding of the United States, and most of this I know because of Dr. Bill, and you get these guys who are looking back at the Roman Republic saying, you know, they really had the right idea. But all the time, once again, a bunch of rich guys thinking a bunch of rich guys had the right idea. I don't think that our well-defined political structures are quite nearly as well-defined as we think they are, Bill. And I think the idea of trying to graft some Western notion of democracy into a region that is, hey, how's democracy working out in Afghanistan?
Not well.
Not at all. How democratic are they in Saudi Arabia or Qatar or Dubai?
Yeah.
Not at all.
Not well there either. Because I have this feeling about Afghanistan that, Bob, there's been a big rise in the use of heroin, hasn't there, since we're active in the land of the poppy in Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I think those northern warlords back in the beginning of that war, if we can think back to part of the beginning of the Afghanistan war, there was a lot of dope dealers here. There were a lot of poppy growers.
Sure there were. And the Taliban actually took a big bite out of that.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't know. I keep coming back to this notion, Bill, that we're, as a country for the most part, atne ute aitbre, if you one what I eat me, because we're flipping out over. That was a member of Congress, Bill, who was saying, "I really, doctor, are the Ebolas coming across our southern border?" And then when he corrected her, said, "Well, yes, of course, but I mean, we have a porous border too."
Well, Bob, I keep going back to the Joe Dashiell Hammett short story, which you haven't read, called "Corkscrew," where the op is assigned to a place that is not a state yet, which probably would have been Arizona. And they were running the border down in those days. The border was being crossed. I know quite a few Americans who have. I know three or four guys who tell me that one of their ancestors crossed here from Canada, and they've been American citizens ever since. Because years ago, you didn't need a passport to go to Canada. There was an amusement park.
Well, I mean, but in our own Calvinistic way, we're totally flipped out about it. I mean, I'm sure Robert or John down in Australia or any of our other Australian listeners could easily point out that, you know what, if you've got a badass headache, you walk down to the apothecary and you can buy a bottle of aspirin with codeine in it.
Yes.
Over the counter.
Well, the one thing I can say about it is an effective painkiller, but... not exactly what you should have. And Australia was settled by a lot of people who the English didn't know what else to do with, wasn't it?
Sure. A lot of the same cranky types that settled Appalachia.
Yeah, they shipped you guys out to the mountains there to defend the country. Because you guys were tough.
Right.
I don't know. And didn't they drop a whole bunch of Scotsmen into Ireland to keep a handle on those Irishmen?
Oh, yeah, that's that old saying that the Scots landed in Ireland and fell on their knees and prayed to God and fell on the locals and prayed on them.
Yeah. It's way over. It just keeps going beyond my belief that, and I feel bad, not for me, because I'm not going to be around here to see much, but I've got grandchildren, two granddaughters who are in their 20s, and you've got young family people, and wonder what they're going to be looking at. But this drum beating over the disease will scare people to death. And
will they are? Hey man, you are in the middle of a freak out up there.
Yeah.
Because
because this woman was she attended a football game at Kent State. I've already heard that one.
Well, no, her family did, but she didn't. But she'd come up to plan her wedding. And then she knew she was a healthcare worker. She knew she had developed a fever, so she calls the CDC and says, "Can I get on the plane and travel?" And they said, "Sure, no problem. Go ahead."
Yeah, they should have never allowed her to fly back again. Or if you wanted to take her someplace, take her there by herself and get her.
Well, somebody. I imagine somebody's been fired by now over that.
Well, I don't care much for the American medical system. I know it's supposedly the best in the world, but, it's been good for me. They've done things for me that, as I say, thanks to Horn family members, I got myself yanked into a hospital when I was even more deranged than usual, you know. Because sometimes I think people probably think this guy's crazy. Bob, you can look to the past and you can see the present. I hate to say that, but that's the way things go. If you track back far enough, you'll see the same damn crap happening all over again.
Yep. Absolutely.
Anyway, I'll let you go. Hang in there.
All right, you take care, Bill.
I don't know whether tomorrow will be open to the club, but we'll see.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, that's what that's part of what the gizmo line's for, Bill.
Yeah, well, I'm glad that when people contribute a little more and get the gizmo line going, I sure appreciate it.
Yeah, yeah. People ponied up about $800 to make the gizmo line happen.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I.
So that's kind of a measure of what folks think of you, Bill.
Well, right now I'm in trouble because people that usually help me with computer setup are. Well, one of them is going to come back. He's going to tie the. There's a device that ties the two together. So if you need the old one, you can fall back on it. But the new one's sitting here and needs work and needs radio stations put into it and all minor stuff like that. But it burns me, Bob, because I was assembling the damn things in, I was 51, so that would have been 94 when I was doing that stuff, putting together computers and. Then my buddy was configuring them, and I wish he had taught me how to do that, but he never did. But today it's not that big. You don't have to configure. You know, you just install the stuff and go, you know. But I've known the computer problems you had, and you know a hell of a lot more than me, you know.
Not enough to keep it from happening, though. I mean, we're still on a workaround here. And over the weekend, hopefully I'll find out if this one machine if it's just a dead power supply, I'll be able to fix it as soon as I can buy one. So, yeah.
Yeah, what do you do when you replace the power supply? What else have you lost?
Well, if it's just the power supply, hopefully nothing.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
So I may even be able to cannibalize one.
Because I never got out of it.
I got my own Bob's Home for Wayward Computer Parts thing going here ever since Peter Godbolt got me started on that little addiction. I got pieces of this and that and, yeah.
My uncle was 70-some years old, 79 or so when he died, but in the basement, when I went down in the basement, it was loaded with TI transistors, and they were, some of this other guy were building computers. He's an old man. But he was also the king of the guys in the organization, you know, when I say organization, you know which one I mean. They used to call him the man with the golden hands because if it was an electronic device usable to make money from cigarette machines to slots. My uncle could fix this stuff. He amazed me when I had to go work on his TV. I said, boy, he's gotten old. What are you going to call me to work on? Because I was from the bigger hammer school of everything, you know?
Yeah.
The bigger the job, the bigger the hammer. Anyway, you take care of yourself.
All right. Have a good evening, Bill. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. And that, of course, is Mr. Stress, Bill, the one and the only. Let's run over to the Skype line and see what Jeremy's got going on. Hey, Jeremy.
Hey, Bob.
Sam.
As regards to the caller before, Bill, I think it was Neil. I kind of got the same feeling when they had Dickhead on for such a poignant part of the show. I realize it probably wasn't in Chris Hayes' hands, but it seemed kind of contradictory to have this guy who would deny everything. I mean, he's done it when you're on the show with him, he's still denied stuff. So
right.
It does seem kind of contradictory in the end, I mean, to have him on there when, face it, what Chris did last week was leaning towards the side of against Cole. I mean, I think that's fair to
well,
say.
Let's get one thing straight, Jeremy. They were trying to do real journalism. Having been associated with the production of the piece, they really, really were. They were trying to be objective and present as best as possible both sides. But the problem is, you know, once you start running up against the Blankenships and the Cecil Robertses, and you realize what the other side is, I don't know. It's tough to. You know what I mean?
No, I understand, but I did agree with that caller when he called and said he felt it kind of weird. I mean, I kind of scratched my head at too and kind of went, that's odd, and I don't really know how he fits in the picture, but I understood why they did it. And I give them all the credit in the world. They did good journalism that week, and really, I think we're fair to both sides, even though we'd like to see it less fair to one side, I guess.
Yeah.
In terms of this Ebola thing, I'm just about had it up to my eyeballs with it, hearing everyone constantly screaming about it. I mean, even the other night, my girlfriend, I consider her to be fairly educated, streetwise anyway, and even she was harping about Ebola and how it's going to be this horrible, horrible thing. And I looked at her and I said, you do realize Ebola spreads kind of like AIDS, right? You have to have direct contact with fluids back and forth. It doesn't spread through the air. She says, yeah, but with AIDS, it dies instantly once it's on the ground. I said, she just, it was hard to get through to her. I mean, I mentioned how Shepard Smith had said it needs to stop.
Oh, and so speaking of Shepard Smith, I give him some props for saying what he did.
Right. Yeah, so do I.
Okay, so now we got a homophobia update. First, you get Brian Fisher, and this was in the stack. This was in the stack for Thorn in the Side Thursday. Anyway, Brian Fisher took to the air today to declare that the only reason Shepard Smith made the comments he did that media should stop trying to flip people out about Ebola was because he's a gay liberal. Shepard Smith is a card-carrying liberal. He's been outed as an active homosexual, so he's down with the entire homosexual agenda. People think he's on Fox, so he's conservative. Anything but. Okay, so that's bad enough. I don't know that Shepard Smith has ever come out. Has he? But people have accused him of being gay. For a while, I don't know what Fisher means that he's been outed, but that was
just. Yeah, if you're headed down the road to say that Rush took it to another level, I just read that too.
Yeah, yeah. So Rush follows up and says that Shep Smith was crying so much during his reporting from New Orleans and Hurricane Katrina, his mascara was running. But we need to dial it all back here. Video, TV, print, loud voices seeking ratings. Who is it that's always touting their ratings, by the way? Is it Fox? And no, he's not been outed because when questioned about his sexuality, which no one has any business doing in the first place, Shepard Smith has responded that the questions are horseshit.
Right. I mean, what does sexuality or orientation have anything to do with news broadcasting? I mean, I'm kind of at a loss for words for it because, I mean, even, like I said, it was bad enough to hear the first idiot say something, but then Rush took it and, like, smeared it even more as, like, trying to...
His mascara is running.
Yes, exactly. He's trying to smear into saying that he's, like, a bad tranny or something like that. That's even more disgusting. That's what he was really doing, if you look at the other
line. Well, yeah, it was. It absolutely was. And it sort of gives us a picture of the right-wing hierarchy of who gets hated most. Okay, so they hate liberals, but they hate liberal gays even more. But a liberal transgendered person, they probably hate them as much or more than they do a Muslim.
Right.
I mean, I just find that disgusting. As if, and there's this moment, too. See, I remember when that trundling tub of guts was given a brief run at a television show. Is anybody going to sit and tell me that they didn't powder him up and make him up before the program? Because they did. And he's got those little itty-bitty piggish eyes anyway. They probably had to put a little eyeliner or mascara on him just to keep him from converging together, you know, over the bridge of his nose.
You know, this all, it all cracks me up when you think about how back in the early 80s, Rush got his shot at TV and couldn't even control Donahue's crowd to the fact where he had to clear the studio out to make people shut up.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. It was terrible. You think they never put any makeup on him when they let him on Monday Night Football or ESPN or whatever the hell? Because I'm pretty sure they did. Because it's necessary. You put enough light on people so that they can show up properly through the lens of a camera, and they're going to get all washed out. I mean, they put a little bit on me last week, and lo and behold, I get home, and my daughter Margie tells me, Daddy, we really are the whitest people in America. I said, honey, I was wearing makeup. She said, not enough, Daddy.
So I'm kind of at a loss. I guess I'm really at a loss for words from the stuff went on today. But, yeah, the Ebola thing, like I said, it's good to my girlfriend, and she's, like, terrified of it. And I said, number one, you're white. I mean, I hate to put a race thing on it, but I said, you'll be better than any person that was colored from outside this country was. You've got full health care. It's not even anywhere close to Vermont. And I said the people that are showing possible symptoms are health care workers that weren't trained how to protect themselves from it or weren't given the right equipment. I said it's ridiculous to be so worried about it. I said the news has done a great job of stirring up a story and creating a frenzy out of something that's bad, but it's not the end of the world.
Well, I mean, get this, okay? Here's another case, and this is out of Cleveland, okay? It's a Reuters story. Cleveland is on the freak out. A 60-year-old guy who was sitting at a card table gambling at the Horseshoe Casino in Cleveland told the dealer that he was out gambling because he didn't want to catch Ebola from his wife. So he leaves the card table, you know, whatever. The dealer flips the F out, calls the cops. The cops go to the guy's house. The cops arrest him. His wife says, I haven't even been to West Africa. He just talks like that. Meanwhile, they go into the pit area where the guy was playing, and they shut it down as a precaution. And now the 60-year-old card player has been charged with inducing panic, a felony. And yet, meanwhile, Sean Hannity, no felonies. I guess it's not a felony to induce panic in New York City. But, I mean, I've heard it around here. I hear somebody go, phew! And they go, I hope it ain't the Ebola.
I know. Well, no, you know, speaking of that last comment you just made, I've mentioned that I work in a government facility during the day in my job, and I overheard some of the security guards today. I was in there, and one of them had mentioned that some guy had come into another building and had on strong cologne, and it made this particular guard sneeze and like cough because it was so strong. And, of course, the guy, smart like every guy, said, well, now you've got Ebola or something like that. Hope you have Ebola. And, I mean, you would think people would be educated, but it really is shocking how stupid people are.
Yeah.
I mean, it's numbing to hear it every single day.
Well, and you know, consider the story that I had earlier this evening, Jeremy. You got my Democratic congressman, Nick Rahal, calling for the borders to be sealed in Africa. And no flights allowed into the United States. You got the second district congresswoman, Shelley Moore Capito, who has dreams of senatorial grandeur, calling for the same thing. You got a bunch of people hooting and hollering for it. Time out, okay? Here's a little test. You want to find out if these people are just pandering to a bunch of scared voters or if they're really serious about it? Here's how you do it. You go to John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, the third in line, or the second in line to the presidency behind the Vice President, and you say, hey, we need to call the Congress back into session. We need to pass a travel ban. Because until such time that they do that, then we know that they're just pandering and trying to, wait, what was that charge? Incite panic. But once again, you know, a card player in Cleveland gets popped with a felony charge, but a pair of Congress critters from West Virginia are walking around trying to induce panic for the sake of a few tawdry votes. You know, shit on them.
I agree, but I see you've only got about 10 minutes left, so I'll let you go so that someone else can try to sneak in here for a few minutes too.
All right, thanks, Jeremy. Have a good evening.
You too, thanks. Bye.
Bye now. Sorry about that. I mean, what the hell happened to the United States that used to exist that would calmly go about the business of dealing with a crisis? I mean, that we have been that country. Jesus God, can you imagine if Fox News had existed during the Cuban Missile Crisis? You'd have had all these Republicans going on to launch now, damn it! JFK's a lily-livered sissy. Yeah, if he's any kind of American, if he had any courage, by God, the Soviet Union would be glass right now, and so would we. Yeah, but we'd be patriotic, God-fearing American glass. Note coming in from Robert in Australia. I always like getting Robert's dispatches because it puts a little perspective on the whole thing. Panadeine Extra is the strongest unprescribed Australian painkiller. This contains 500 milligrams of paracetamol and 15 milligrams of codeine. It's available over the counter at the chemist's and I believe in some supermarkets. Now, reality check. If that was the case in West Virginia, we'd be grinding it up, snorting it, or grinding it up and cooking it. Jesus. P.S. And yes, some of our pollies and our politicians are getting on the Ebola bandwagon, saying we shouldn't send personnel because they may get infected. Meanwhile, a Perth woman has started an online petition to get the Australian government to move its arse and help. Oh, and by the way, the former Secretary General of the United Nations, Kofi Annan. Well, I'm sure the right wing will be right upset about this. You see what I did there? Right wing, right upset. He said that the world only started giving a damn about Ebola once it got out of Africa. Congratulations! You get the toaster this evening, Kofi Annan. Except it ain't funny. Thank you very much to Glenn for helping us get started on tomorrow's fundraising. Much appreciated. That means we'll only have to raise $140 tomorrow evening. Thank you very kindly, Glenn. Also, this coming from Robert. The top five causes of death in Australia: heart disease, vascular disease, Alzheimer's disease, bronchus and lung cancer, and respiratory disease. Who'd have thunk? I bet you skin cancer, melanoma is on the rise, though, isn't it? So we got about 8 minutes left in the program. Let's end with a giggle. I mean, it's kind of a giggle, but remember, this is the Ebola EGADS edition. I just don't know which EGAD to run with. Okay, we dealt with Brian Fisher, so he's out. No, that's too much. No, not that either. Oh, sure, why not? Because he's always good for a giggle. Let's check in with the old liquor supply officer, who, oddly enough, where the hell did that come from? I hate it when audio starts automatically. Bastards.
And then stays.
Shoot. We'll get this beat yet. Really, really will, I promise. The old liquor supply officer is actually trying to cut into the EGADS Ebola flip out. But as usual, when Marion gets after something, it's almost like lead pipe cinch. He's gonna get it sideways. Sometimes he's funny, sometimes he ain't. He's actually going to talk about how one can get, Ebola. Just, we're right to the close to the end of the program, but still, it might be good to have the duct tape and the hockey puck handy. Come on, Marion. Damn it. Marion! What is the Fonz doing now? Oh, this thing is old and tired. Jesus, this processor's... Here we go. Come on, Marion. Anytime. Really, this is how we're going to end the program tonight. That's exactly where I was going, Devin noting. Sometimes he sounds like a nut, sometimes he doesn't. No, he always sounds like a nut. Oh, this is so good, though.
It's
This person says, I'm planning to go on a mission trip to Kenya in December. I believe that God heals today, and I'm not consumed about the chance of contracting Ebola. I'm also a person who's willing to take practical precautions. However, some friends and family think that my decision to travel is foolish during this season, saying that I'm testing God and asking if I have a death wish. What do you think? I do not believe I'm being foolish, and I want to honor those around me, but I want to follow God's call on my life most of all. Do you think there are undue risks that we do not know about and the dangers are higher than perceived here in America?
Not in Kenya. You might get AIDS in Kenya. The people have AIDS. You got to be careful. I mean, the towels could have AIDS. So there are things, there are diseases in Africa.
Yeah. Got to be careful in Kenya. Those Kenyan towels have AIDS. See, that's why I wanted to run that at the end of the program. You can't top that. That makes you wonder if that's the excuse that Marion's had had there, you know, just stage right in case anything ever. I dried myself off in the public bath with an AIDS towel. That's how I got it. Yes, of course. It's probably Obama, Kenyan Obama towels. The towels are alive with the HIV and Ebola. Thank you, Carol Baker. That just made the evening end lovely. So there we are, the end of Thorn in the Side Thursday. It will be tomorrow will be the first installment of Friday on the Front Porch with the new Gizmo line. So by all means, pop by, check in, jump into the Skype, the Horn Malloy Skype chat, and we will have a fine old time. Thank you very kindly to Ron and to Glenn. Ron helped us. Ron finished out fundraising for today, and Glenn got us started for tomorrow. Thank you, both of you. Thanks again to Margaret for covering, have a show on me for like 3 days. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you to Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox for everything he's been doing to get the website back up and running and everything he does generally. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Not a packet passes nor a stream streams without the good offices of Ben Birch and White Rose Society. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and ACHECT, ACHEACT.org. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Night, y'all.